Moderna has gotten some criticism for mostly distributing its vaccine to wealthier countries. Now the drug maker is planning to make its vaccine more available in developing nations. In related news, Pfizer authorized its antiviral COVID pill to be manufactured and sold in 95 developing nations to make up over half the world's population. Still, the gap between poor and wealthy nations when it comes to vaccine access is huge. Under 5% of people in lower-income countries have received at least one dose of the vaccine. We're talking now about access to the COVID vaccine and to healthcare in lower-income countries. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have friends or family somewhere in the world where vaccines are hard to come by? What are you hearing from them? Do you think lower-income countries should have to pay for the vaccine, or should they be provided free or at lower cost? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Prashant Yadav is a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development, an affiliate professor of technology and operations management at INSAD. He is an expert in health supply chains. Prashant, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, you wrote, glad to be here. You co-wrote a piece back in April of 2020 now, while vaccines were still hypothetical, that the world needed to plan for distribution of these vaccines in lower income countries. Did we ultimately fall down on the job?
Yes. Yeah, so in April of 2020, we said, here are some things that we worry about. The scarcity in countries around the globe, which will not be able to access vaccines on their own. They will need some kind of financial support, some kind of purchasing support. And if we don't fix that, we're going to put everybody in the world in peril. And that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. I think people tried, governments around the country, supranational entities, such as the new COVAX mechanism, which was created. But just the sheer scarcity of production and supply has not allowed us to do many of the things that we had laid out in our April 2020 article. And we still continue to face that as a problem.
And we have Moderna saying, yes, we're going to take a step, or we've got a deal in the works to distribute a vaccine in developing countries. What are you looking at as companies like Moderna and the other big vaccine manufacturers try to ramp up production and then point it in the direction of these countries that are very much under vaccinated?
Yeah, so I think announcements such as what Moderna made for putting the doses that need to go into developing countries ahead of the orders that need to be fulfilled in high-income countries, and similar announcement by Pfizer, other companies which have highly efficacious and safe vaccines. I think those are our only chances of solving this in the short term. Because in the short term, we need vaccines from companies who have large established manufacturing sites. And all we're asking is, of the output that's coming out of those production lines, can we send some of that output to the countries which have very low coverage versus keeping that output as buffer or as additional stock, just in case, for high-income countries. And we shift to the medium term, then I think we start seeing a different picture. Then we ought to think about not just getting some of the production output from the large factories that Moderna and Pfizer, BioNTech, and others have created, but also think about, should there be manufacturing plants in regions of the world which haven't had sufficient access, whether it is in Latin America or Africa or some parts of Central Asia, and what would that look like? How would we create that? So I think there are two issues here. One is a short term and one is a medium term.
How about distribution now? Once vaccines hopefully get to some of these countries, these lower income countries, is there the public health infrastructure in place to get those shots delivered to people before the shots expire?
Yeah, so there are two things at play. One is, I think this is the kind of thinking which made us worry about, should we be using Pfizer, BioNTech, or Moderna's shots in developing countries which don't have the kind of infrastructure that is needed? They require ultra cold chain. We don't have that. And that, in a way, put the developing countries at the back of the queue because we didn't necessarily prioritize such vaccines for them. So yes, infrastructure is a challenge. The current infrastructure in many of the countries is designed largely for vaccinating kids. So it's a routine immunization for children. Converting that to vaccinate adults is not straightforward and simple, but it's very doable. And many agencies are working on it and are doing it. That doesn't mean the problem has been entirely solved. But at the same time, I think the dynamic that because there isn't enough infrastructure, we should therefore wait and hold on to the doses because until we have the infrastructure ready, let's not send it. That keeps us stuck in the circular reference problem as to let's not send the vaccines, we don't have infrastructure, but we don't have infrastructure planning in place because we don't know when vaccines are coming. So I think we've got to live with the infrastructure that we have. We have to do something ingenuous, creative, and we have to do something which is frugal and make it work with whatever way we can.
I've heard some public health concerns that if we have very large unvaccinated problems here in the United States or anywhere in the world, it raises the risk of new strains of COVID being able to evolve. It ends up becoming a threat, maybe even to countries that are better vaccinated. Do you hope that that line of thought kind of lights a fire under people and gets them to try to solve these problems sooner than later?
Yeah, I think the science is clear in this. I mean, as long as there are large populations around the world who remain unvaccinated, there will be new variants. We know some of the new variants that have come up, where they evolved from, and such variants will continue to emerge. And our sense of belief and confidence that because we have a large part of our population vaccinated with two doses, or in some cases with the third booster dose, we are safe. I think that will be eroded. That confidence will get eroded quickly once we have more variants emerge. So I think it is important to keep in mind that unless we can solve it for many countries where the vaccination rates are really low, we are not going to see an end to this pandemic or even a state where we can all start feeling safe. Now, that doesn't mean that just providing vaccines to the countries is the only challenge we're facing. There have to be other things such as creating demand, solving vaccine disinformation, and other things in those countries.
We're talking to Prashant Yadav about lack of access to the COVID vaccine in lower income countries around the world and the effort to overcome that hurdle. Prashant is a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and an expert in healthcare supply chains. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about how this all works, how to get vaccines to countries all over the world, even where there's not much access right now? What do you think should be done to make the COVID vaccine more accessible in poor countries? Do you think wealthier countries or the pharmaceutical companies should foot some, all of the bill when it comes to making vaccines available in countries that maybe can't afford to buy them all? Call in now at 800-642-1234. If you're from or if you have friends or family in one of these lower income countries that doesn't have access to vaccines, love to hear what you are seeing. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk now with Prashant Yadav. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and an expert in healthcare supply chains. We're talking about access, lack of access in many cases, to COVID vaccines in lower income countries around the globe. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions on the topic and maybe your experiences, or if you have contacts, friends or family in countries with less access to vaccines, love to hear what's going on at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Prashant, are you optimistic that these hurdles are going to get overcome anytime soon, by the end of this year or early 2022?
I am optimistic about some things, but I'm not as optimistic about others. So, for example, we are seeing a lot of progress on vaccine companies, prioritizing developing country access. More importantly, the U.S. government donating or at least prioritizing vaccines from both Pfizer and Moderna, the COVAX initiative trying to get more supplies. So on vaccine supplies, things are progressing. There are, like you pointed out earlier, there are still some infrastructure constraints that we need to have a more systematic look at to overcome them. But then I think there are also things such as syringe shortages, which have recently come to light. And I think this is something we've talked about before, that the specialized kinds of syringes that are required, for example, for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in countries which require injection safety, so they require syringes that are auto-disabled. Now we are running into a very scarce supply situation for syringes. So I think we have to we have to solve a lot of problems together with a systems view. And sometimes my worry is, or my slight lack of optimism is, in trying to solve one bottleneck, we solve that problem and then something else pops up dynamically. And then are we going to be able to solve all of them together? Another promising thing is the oral pills that have come out, the antivirals, both from Merck and from Pfizer, and the work that the two companies have done in licensing them out to a large number of manufacturers. That is promising. That may create access at least to the oral treatments quicker than there has been for vaccines.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Sid is with us in Green Bay. Sid, hello.
Hi there.
What did you want to bring up, Sid?
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting conversation that you guys are having right now. I'm originally from India, and I've been in the United States for the last 7 years. I work and live in the Green Bay area in Wisconsin, and it's amazing how stark the difference is in the vaccine rollout here versus in a country like India, right? I think the guest spoke about how pharmaceutical companies should be or can they bear the brunt or take over the expenses of actually having vaccines distributed and produced and distributed in developing countries, right? I'm not sure if that could be a good approach, but I think what the developed countries can do is that they could make sure that the vaccines at least are reaching these developing countries. My mom and my sister live in India, and they were able to get their vaccines because they were probably like the first in line, and they were really proactive about getting their vaccines first. I have a bunch of cousins who had to wait for months and months to actually get their vaccines.
Sid, thanks a lot for calling in. And I wanted to bring up actually India, Prashant, so thanks for bringing that up, Sid. India, as I understand it, has a pretty big pharmaceutical manufacturing base. A lot of the world relies on India, but India needs vaccines itself. What are you watching for in that country?
So India, in some ways, is a place which has a lot of manufacturing capacity for vaccines. Some of that they have put to use for making COVID vaccines. In that sense, for countries in the income category of India, which is, you know, lower middle income countries, India is probably the farthest ahead because of its own manufacturing. But at the same time, India has a large population. And for being able to vaccinate more than 1 billion people, this required far more capacity than perhaps what the government of India could put to bear for COVID vaccines. And in a sense, what it did was that India, which is also the big vaccine factory for most of the developing world. So in the developed world, we get our vaccines from companies that are located in the US, in the EU, in Japan, and other places. But when you go to developing countries in Africa and Latin America, many of the vaccines do come from India, the childhood vaccines. So India stopped exporting for some period of time when it was focusing its own populations first. And that meant the global initiative called COVAX, which was designed to provide vaccines to countries around the world, didn't get sufficient supplies from India. And that put everybody in a state of jeopardy. But at the same time, it was understandable for India to do what it was doing, which is to prioritize and get the billion people in India vaccinated. So it was a very challenging dilemma that the government of India had faced. But at the same time, to answer Sid's question, I think India has a far better situation than many other countries do. India also has a couple of homegrown vaccines that they've developed, one which has been approved, a couple of them which are under development, one large manufacturing company, another one coming up. So I think things look quite promising in India. I think what we want to see is India continuing to play its role as the vaccine factory to the world and exporting to countries in Africa and other places, and then also other countries to emulate that model and create their own vaccine manufacturing networks.
Sid, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Jane in Madison. Jane, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Jane?
I have a comment. I have been thinking about the lack of vaccine development in other continents like Africa. I've not heard of any manufacture of vaccines in Africa. I was wondering if it would be feasible for companies such as Pfizer to have a subsidiary in continent that, like Africa, maybe South America, that does not have manufacturing ability.
Jane, I got you. We don't have too much time left. But Prashant, what did you think of? What would you think of an existing company like a Pfizer getting some capacity in Africa to manufacture their vaccines?
Absolutely. I think that's a direction, that's a line of thinking we all have to focus on. I think both Pfizer and Moderna and Pfizer's partner BioNTech have announced plans to start their manufacturing partnerships in Africa in more than one location, in South Africa, in Senegal, in Rwanda. But the big question remains, what will be the timeline for it? To have such plants, we need workforce. We need people who know chemistry, who know manufacturing, who know laboratory, who know regulatory startup. So that workforce development is not at a stage where you can have that going right away. Also, to set up these plants, you need to think about what will they do after COVID. So will these plants run completely dry after the demand for COVID vaccines starts to dissipate a little bit? Or are we going to design them flexible enough so then they can manufacture other vaccines, such as, you know, for yellow fever or diphtheria or other kinds of diseases? And if they do, then it may require slightly more capital expenditure. It may also require us to wait a little bit longer because the equipment then will maybe take a couple of months more. So those are complex trade-offs, which I think companies like Pfizer, others, their partners in Africa are dealing with. But then it's not just Pfizer, BioNTech, and the larger companies. There are also some homegrown companies in Africa which are coming up and saying, we want to try it on our own. So I think we've got to accept both models of how this manufacturing expansion in Africa, Latin America will happen.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Prashant Yadav, Senior Fellow at the Center for Global Development, looking at the effort to provide vaccines in lower-income countries around the world.